pas su comprendre qui seul comptait pour moi. Et près de la...
Good evening, Sophie.
Good evening.
It's boiling out there. I feel like we should all wear tank tops.
Sure, but it's kind of chilly out there. I mean, it's minus 15 degrees Celsius with wind chill.
So, are you headed off to school now? Don't tell me you forgot your homework.
Wait, what? It's morning, it's January, and it's Saturday. What are you talking about?
You didn't know? It's National Opposite Day, January 25th.
Okay. So, how are you supposed to celebrate that?
Fine, let's break the rules so I can explain it. You have to talk and do everything the opposite way.
Well, can I play?
No.
Let's turn off the radio and not listen to Anything Goes.
You're listening to Anything Goes on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. For kids, by kids, all kids radio. Coming up on tonight's show is a colorful game, going back 800 years to the clans of Scotland, part two of the Hope Chest, and the story of a tragic accident. Stay tuned.
And welcome to another episode of Guess That Brand with me, Nancy Webster. The way this game works is that I give facts about the brand without mentioning the brand's name. At the end, the contestant who correctly names the brand wins a fabulous prize. Now, before we start, let's meet the three contestants who have signed up for this week's show. Hello, contestant number one.
Hi, I'm Haley. Thanks so much for having me here. It was so hard to pick out an outfit, though, seeing as my wardrobe is so big. But I'm ready for this. I love publicity.
Haley, you do realize this is a radio show, right? No one will see you. But I'm glad you're here. Next, contestant number two.
Hello! My name is Alex, and I'm so excited to be here. I've been looking up all these companies to make sure I'm physically and mentally prepared. You see, I have to study for things, or I'm insecure.
Oh, then I'm sure you'll do just fine. Finally, contestant number three.
Hey, I'm Luke, and I'm only here because I want to meet Ellen. She's a great host.
I'm sorry, but this is not the Ellen show.
Rats!
Anyhow, let's make some progress and get started. Are you ready?
Yeah!
Great, let's begin. Remember, you can answer whenever you're ready or wait until the end. Here are your clues. One. Edwin and C. Harold Smith founded this company in 1885.
McDonald's.
Nope. Two. They had a contest in 1993 to find more names for the products, and some winners were macaroni and cheese, Granny Smith, Razzmatazz, and denim. Three. This company has many products, including Extreme Twistable, Silly Putty, Widescreen Light Designer, and Color Explosion 3D. 4. Studies show that 80% of the users of this product use this brand. Finally, number 5. This brand is often found in an art room or possibly one's classroom, or even in a home with kids that like art but parents who like non-toxic supplies. That's the end of your hints. It's time to guess.
Adidas.
Nope.
Air Miles.
Not even close. Alex?
Non-toxic products and is related to art? Is it by any chance Crayola?
You're right! Congratulations, Alex. You have just won this episode of Guess That Brand. How do you feel?
Overwhelmed. A part of me is thinking this is a dream.
Well, it's not. You just won a box of 120 Crayola crayons.
Oh my goodness!
Join us next time on Guess That Brand. You can see how to be on our show and see when we're in your town www.guessthatbrandnancywebster.com. Bye!
I just won Guess That Brand! Yay!
This episode was written by Chloe Lee Goche. The characters: Haley was played by Grace Manning, Alex was played by Sophie Manning, and Luke was played by James Lustig, and Nancy Webster was played by Chloe Lee Goche. Thank you.
Ancestors. A very interesting part of my family history is kept safely in a giant book called the Douglas Bible that my grandfather, Big Mike, keeps at his house. This book is so old that the pages are discolored, and the writing is so old that it is hard to see in places. The interesting thing about this book is that it traces my ancestors on my mother's side of the family, the Douglases, all the way back till the time when there were clans in Scotland. My ancestors lived in Scotland in the Douglas Castle. There were two Douglas clans, the Red Douglases and the Black Douglases. My ancestors were part of the Black Douglases. These two clans were fighting in wars over the Douglas Castle. Both clans wanted to have it as their own. In the end, the Red Douglases won the sought-after Douglas Castle. There was a famous Black Douglas named Sir James Douglas, who I'm named after. He lived from 1286 to 1330. He was a skilled knight known for his courage and ferocity. Douglas and his troops battled England and became known by the English as a terrible boogeyman. To the Scottish, he was good Sir James Douglas. He was so feared in England that it is said that the mothers would sing to their children, "Hushy, hushy, little petty, hushy, hushy, do not fret ye, the Black Douglas shall not get ye." The end. Thanks for listening. I'm James Lustig.
All right, now for the first Would You Rather, with Sophie,
James, Tawa,
and Grace.
Would you rather eat cheese sauce with ice cream or brownies with spinach?
Brownies with spinach, because you could chop the spinach up into little pieces and just cook it into the brownie mix.
I would rather brownies and spinach because I don't like cheese sauce and ice cream combined.
All right, James, what would you prefer?
I would prefer spinach and brownies.
Why?
Because I don't like cheese sauce or ice cream.
All right, very good. Our next question. Would you rather be in a plus 50 degrees Celsius weather or minus 50 degrees Celsius? Tawa?
I would rather minus 50 degrees Celsius because it's easier to warm up than it is to cool down.
Now, Grace.
I would rather plus 50 degrees Celsius because I love swimming and you swim in hot weather.
Very good. Now, James.
I would rather plus because you could just jump into the water. Or if you were in cold, if you jumped into an acid pool, you'd burn to death.
All right. That's very interesting. Next, would you rather be constantly in an endless math class or constantly in an endless English class? James.
I would rather be in an endless math class because I like math more than English.
Tawa?
I would rather an endless math class because I prefer math over English.
And finally, Grace.
I would rather an endless English class because I like my English teacher a lot better than I like my math teacher.
All right. And now our final would you rather. Would you rather fight one horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses? James, you're up first.
I would rather fight 100 duck-sized horses because they're so small you could just do a belly flop onto all of them and kill them.
Very interesting. Next, Tawa.
I would prefer 100 duck-sized horses because duck-sized horses are smaller and easier to fight.
And finally, Grace!
I would rather one horse-sized duck because it's one animal to fight versus 100.
Personally, as the hostess, I would prefer to fight 100 duck-sized horses because, as Tawa said, they're easier to fight. All right! Those were our month's Would You Rather.
What would you rather do? Swimming for Sally by Sophie Manning. How many times have I thought this over? Just go. Go. You know you won't be able to sleep one more night if you don't. Why is this so hard? Finally, I manage to pull myself out of bed. The creaky steps are easy to avoid. Every crack in the floor is memorized. I've walked this way at least twice every night since my sister drowned, and every night I've turned around and went back to bed. But I'm not turning back now. I open the door to outside slowly and slip through it. The screen slams back into place. I wince. The dewy grass is slippery beneath my feet. I stop short at the path to the beach. It takes all my will not to run away, so before I can change my mind, I sprint. The cool sand tickles between my toes and covers my foot with its dusty substance that stays. The water is dark. Small waves lap upon the shore. A painful memory flashes through my mind. It's my baby sister, almost 2 years old. I'm lying on the beach sunbathing. I can still remember the book I was reading. It's still on my shelf, though ripped in half. Black Beauty. My mom's rifling through the beach bag. Dad's at home. She must have walked out on the jetty and fallen off, because that's where we found her. Suddenly, Mom had turned around and said slowly, "Where's Sally?" Her voice had turned to a scream as she looked around. "Where's Sally?" I stared frantically. Mom ran up the beach and screamed. I raced to join her. Sally was lying face down in the water. Her face was blue. She screamed again. She didn't stop screaming for a long time. The funeral was 2 days later. My only sister was dead. I remember how she looked in her coffin. So small, smaller than I thought she would have been. Mom had dressed her all up in her old Easter dress. My tears poured down for 3 weeks before I calmed down. I stand at the water's edge and look down. I can see the rock she fell off. I can see the water that drowned her. I finally did it. I finally overcame my endless fear. The spot I was laying when she left us stands out like it's in neon lights. Why didn't I look up? No, I'm not thinking like that anymore. I'm done with that. The air is cool and the slight wind calms me. The beach is no longer my enemy. I lean down and dive into the crisp water, sighing. My hair waves around me. I miss you, Sally. I'll always miss you.
In the case of symptoms similar to those of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, sore throat, loss of taste, or smell, you should take a rapid home screening test. If you test positive, isolate yourself at home and please follow the self-isolation instructions. If you don't have a rapid home screening test, please self-isolate for the recommended period. Visit quebec.ca/self-isolating for complete instructions on how to protect yourself and others. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
It's Anything Goes, the show written by kids, for kids, all kids radio.
On CKUT 90.3 FM.
And now the continuation of The Hope Chest by Grace Manning. Last month, we were introduced to Kathleen, a young girl living on Nantucket. Her father, Thomas Jenkins, has left on a whaling voyage. Kathleen writes letters and sends them to each place that her father's boat stops at. Her family begins to get worried as Thomas's time at sea stretches into years. One of our fishing boats sailed into port today, the Edith Rose. I run down to the dock in case the fishermen have news of the whale ship, the Kathleen. Olive and Anne come right behind me, with Mother close at our heels. At the dock, the fishermen are unloading the fish, but without their usual laughter and rude jokes. Mother warns me not to get too close to the clumsy fishermen, for they could easily drop a box of fish or an anchor. I run right into the scuffle anyway, and call for a man who would tell me of news. The men stop working and look at me with pity. One man steps forward. It is Charles Baker, who lives on Nantucket when he isn't out at sea.
Kathleen,
he says gravely,
I don't know where your father is, but one of the fishermen found this floating off the coast of Barbados.
Charles rummages around in one of the crates for a moment before producing a piece of splintered wood. He hands it to me, and I run my fingers over the faded letters on it. Kathleen, it's missing the N, but there's no doubt about it. This piece of wood was once part of my father's ship. I can't feel anything but the wood under my hand. I stare unseeing up at Charles and then hand the wood back to him. He pushes it gently back at me.
Keep it,
he says, and tries to smile. The men begin to work again, unloading the Edith Rose. I stand in the middle of it, trapped by thoughts. Anne shakes me out of my stupor.
What are you doing?
She hisses, looking anxiously at the rough men around us. I let her pull me through the crowd to reach Mother and Olive standing near the post office. Olive is crying softly into Mother's sleeve. Anne slumps dejectedly against the brick wall and lets her chin fall onto her chest. Mother and I stare at each other for what seems like forever before she breaks away and we walk slowly home. Dear Papa, where are you? The Edith Rose came into port today and Charles Baker had a piece of the Kathleen to show me. Are you really shipwrecked? I don't believe it. You're a survivor, Papa, and if there's anyone who deserves to live, it's you. I'll never lose hope, even if everyone else does. I'm still waiting for you, Papa. We all are. Love, Kathleen. Instead of mailing this letter, I roll it up neatly and slide it into an empty medicine bottle that I rescued from the trash barrel behind the apothecary's shop. From the dock, I throw the bottle as far out into the water as I can. I watch it bob away, a tiny speck of brown in an ocean of green and blue. I then stoop down to the dock and pick up the shard of wood that Charles gave to me. I look at it one last time and then hurl it into the sea. Dear Papa, there was a funeral for you today. Not just for you, of course, but for all the men that were on the Kathleen. Mother, Anne, and Olive cried during the ceremony, but I saved my tears for afterwards, when I was alone in my room. What's funny is that everyone in town believes you're dead. Not one person hopes that you're still alive and waiting to be rescued. I don't show my hope outwardly, but inside I'm hoping, Papa. You have to come back. Love, Kathleen. I wear a beautiful dress to the funeral, although nobody is paying attention to my clothes. Olive and Anne have new dresses too, but Mother has had hers for a while. I've seen it before, hanging in her closet. I know she hoped she would never have the need to wear it. We sit upright in pews that are full to bursting. Even people who didn't know anyone on the Kathleen are there. A lost whaleboat on Nantucket is no small thing. When the priest begins to speak, men take off their hats and ladies bow their heads in prayer. I dip my head, but I peer out from under my curtain of hair and watch. I watch tears falling and mouths turning down in agonized and silent screams as the priest begins to talk about each of the men. I listen when Papa's name is announced. He's last because he was the captain.
We remember Thomas H. Jenkins as one thing in particular, a leader. Many times he has led men through huge storms and dangerous circumstances. He was a well-respected man throughout our community, and he will be greatly missed by all.
Outside the chapel, Mother talks quietly with the other woman in mourning, while Anne, Olive, and I stand off to the side. I watch the seagulls circling overhead and take deep breaths of the salty air, calming myself. Dear Papa, another boat came in today, but this time a foreign one. It was called the Borderer. Do you remember this boat, Papa? Because it rescued nearly all your crew. Not everyone was dead after all. You weren't on this boat, Papa. Will you be on the next one? Will there even be a next one? I felt a pang inside when I saw so many wives seeing their husbands and so many children hugging their fathers. There were tears again, but these were happy tears. Mother doesn't smile anymore, Papa. She has already given up hope. Our house is so quiet now. Come home, Papa. Love, Kathleen. My heart leaps when I first hear the news that a foreign boat is in the harbor. Perhaps they have news of Papa. We hurry down to the docks to find men from the Kathleen leaping down from the steamer to embrace their family members. Mother's hand flies up to her mouth and she trembles. I crane my neck as more and more men file off the ship to meet their loved ones. 28 of my Papa's crew members are on the ship, and not one of them is Papa.
I think we all lost a little hope after that. Mother won't even look at us anymore. I can't feel anything, just a steady numbness that makes me feel quiet inside. I keep writing letters to Papa and throwing them into the sea. That's how I remind myself of him. Right after the borderer leaves, I carry my jewelry box into the attic and lock it in a chest, along with everything else that reminds me of what might have been, should Papa have returned. All the treasures he brought back for me from foreign places. Locked in the attic. Dear Papa, should I give in to everyone who says you're dead? Should I stop trusting my instincts and just let you go? I tell myself to hold on to wait. I tell myself that you'll be home soon. But I'm getting tired of waiting, Papa. I'm not sure that I can convince myself much longer. Half a year has passed since the borderer brought some of your men home. Are you coming home at all? Love, Kathleen. My mother sends us back to school. She says we can't stay home all day and do nothing. I would feel angry if she had said that 2 years ago, but now I feel nothing but emptiness. So we walk to school and walk home, hardly talking. I look at my sisters and remember what they used to look like, so vibrant and alive. Now they just look tired, like they can't wait until the end of the day. I suppose I must look like that too. Charles Baker used to stop by almost every day after school with cookies from his wife and cards from his small children. But now my papa is a person from the past, nothing more than a memory. Dear Papa, I have to think about you hard now, just to remember what you look like. I think I'm forgetting you, Papa. I don't want to, but it's hard to remember someone who nobody even mentions anymore. Mother is worried about the money running out. There are no more new dresses or fancy dinners at restaurants. I don't miss that so much. People look at us differently now, with a sad, soft look in their eyes. They grasp my hands and tell me how truly, truly sorry they are. Love, Kathleen. I'm down on the beach looking out into the waves when something catches my eye. It's no bigger than my fingertip, but I can tell that it's headed for Nantucket. The tentative hopefulness that bubbles up in me is warm and uninspected, like an old friend. I wade out into the water until my clothes are soaked through. I can see now that the small speck is a ship. I can see its tall masts and its white sails like the wings of some great bird. When I can stay no longer on the beach, I rush to the docks. They are desolate. Not a single fisherman or whaler is to be seen. When the men come back from voyages, they tend to want to be as far from the water as possible. They prefer to be at home, spending time with their families and getting used to the solidity of land. I can see the ship clearly now, and a great weight of disappointment falls into my stomach, replacing the hopefulness. It's not Papa's ship. It is not the Kathleen. I sink down into a crouch and look at my reflection in the water. A small face stares back at me, whose eyes quickly fill with tears. It hurts to see Papa's face in my own. I angrily splash my reflection out of the water and get up to leave. The boat is in the harbor. I see the men jumping and hugging each other, so happy to be home again. None of them were really sure that they'd survive the ship at all. Their voices become sharper.
Hey, Jenkins,
a fisherman yells.
Isn't that your last on the docks there?
I lift my face towards the salty spray that the nearing boat flings onto me, and I catch the first glimpse of Papa that I have seen in over 6 years. What comes next is all a blur. Papa crosses the gangplank in three long strides and lifts me in his arms. He hugs me and spins me around, and when he finally puts me down, I can see tears in his blue eyes.
This was your great-great-grandmother's house,
my mom explains in the car on the way into town.
She lived here with her mom and dad and her two sisters. What were they named, Jack? Something long and fancy.
She pauses for a moment and looks out the window. My sister Sarah nods furiously, mouth agape.
Anyway,
Mom continues,
they were pretty wealthy and well-known around here. I'll bet if you mentioned her name to a couple of islanders, they'd recognize her as a friend of their grandparents.
What was great-great-grandma's name, Mommy?
Sarah asks.
Kathleen, honey. Her name was Kathleen,
my mom replies. The house is damp and cold when my dad finally gets the front door open and we pile inside. It's mostly empty, which disappoints Sarah a little. I think she was hoping there'd be some paintings or old dolls that the girls used to play with. A grand staircase spirals up to the second floor, and I leave my parents and Sarah downstairs so I can investigate. Mom was right. There were three girls. Each one must have had their own bedroom. Lucky. I have to share a bedroom with Sarah back home in New York. The first three rooms are all empty, but the fourth has the skeleton of a four-poster bed in it. The view from the fourth bedroom is amazing. My breath catches in my throat when I see it. It's almost as if I'm flying above the bay. The house is set high on the cliff, so when I look out the window, all I can see is the water below. I rest my elbows on the dusty windowsill and gaze out at the sea. I try to imagine my great-great-grandmother looking out this same window, wondering when her dad will be home. I shake my head and smile at my own craziness. Mom is buried in boxes and cobwebs when I finally find her up in the attic. It's more of a crawl space than an attic, really.
Can you believe this?
She asks, gesturing to the piles of junk around her.
Kathleen must have never thrown anything out.
I nod in wonder and sneeze.
Bless you,
Mom mutters, sticking her entire head in an old box.
You can look around if you want.
I wade over to a corner and spot a big trunk that is half buried under all the empty boxes and old clothes.
It takes a while for me to pry it open, but when I do, I can hardly bear to look in. My eyes water uncontrollably at the dust and scraps of old paper that flutter out. Blindly, I stick my hand into the trunk and grope around until I hit something solid. A box. I pull it out and wipe it off with the corner of my shirt. It's a small box that looks like it was meant for jewelry, but when I pull open one of the tiny drawers, all that's inside are a few holes in tattered red velvet. The two mirrors on the front are cloudy and battered shells line the edges. The sides are made of some kind of ripped paper, and it seems fragile. I gently turn it over. On the bottom, some words are written in a spidery script. Kathleen Jenkins. I can hardly believe my eyes. This box had belonged to my great-great-grandmother. I start to yell for my mom, but stop. Somehow I want to keep this a secret. A secret between me and a young girl named Kathleen Jenkins.
It's time to make an appointment for your booster dose against COVID-19. Visit quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine to follow the vaccination sequence plan for your area and book your appointment online. To continue protecting yourself against COVID-19 and its variants, get a booster dose and keep following distancing measures, wearing a mask, and washing your hands. The booster dose, the best way to stay protected longer. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
...7:20 a.m. 13 hours before. Look, Dad, I sincerely don't care about who won the championship. If you could just stop coaxing me into liking soccer, I'll like it when I like it. And at the moment, I truly don't give a toss. I'm sorry. I just want you to find something you enjoy. Oh, I'll shut up now. We can walk to school in 20 minutes. God, do you ever listen to me? I told you last night I have to be at school at 7:30 for my play practice. Oh, I'll leave now. I'll walk to work myself. See you tonight. So I went to school. My regular classes, regularly disgusting lunch, and a regular grin on my face at 3:15. There was a snowstorm outside. I heard the wind howl through the school walls. One of my friend's mom was kind enough to give me a ride home. 3:30 p.m., 4 hours, 30 minutes before. Thank you for the ride, miss.
Anytime.
See you tomorrow, Nick. He didn't. 5:20 p.m., 3 hours before.
You know you made your father really sad when you left for school. I think you should apologize.
I know, I was just annoyed. I should have calmed down. We could go to the park on Saturday.
Sounds like a great idea.
8:19 p.m., 1 minute before.
Where is your father? He should have been here an hour ago.
He's probably stuck in traffic. I didn't know how right I was. Or there was more work than he expected.
Maybe it's your father.
She opened the door. A police officer stood there, cap in hand.
Hello, officer. Is there a problem?
Ma'am, we need to speak to you. Your husband, Stephen Jones, was in a car accident. Medical personnel rushed to the scene, but they were too late. I'm sorry for your loss. At this point, my mother was crying. Tears rushed from her eyes. I was so confused. I didn't know what to do. I ran upstairs to my room. I couldn't digest the thought that my last words ever to my father were harsh and tainted. Sorry. I'm so sorry, Dad. I should never have been so harsh. From then on, I savored every moment with friends and family.
This has been Anything Goes.
For kids, by kids, and all kids radio.
On CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Today's show was conceived, written, and performed by
James Lustig,
Grace Manning,
Sophie Manning,
and Chloe Lee Gauthier. Today's show was produced by Amy Allison, Sarah DeAy, and Michael Zakin.
Technical production and Wizkiddedness, Tawa Menene Tardiv.
Tune in 1 month from now for another episode of Anything Goes.
Anything Goes, the show written by kids, for kids, all kids radio.
On CKUT 90.3 FM. effacer, vai cobrir, put my